sunshine, tears and rain, precious memories of years gone by. Hours of darkness, fear and pain, all the time that we had. When all that's left is a photograph, not one golden moment in the sun. Doing what had to be done.
Hello and welcome back to Callum and David's Any Requests podcast. This is, of course, the podcast where you, the listener, can donate £5 a month via our Patreon subscription service and request any theme or topic that you want for us to do a podcast on.
That is entirely true. And this week we are returning to something we've already looked at a few weeks ago, which is cop rock. How would you briefly summarise what cop rock is for those of us who haven't seen the or listened to the previous podcast?
I got distracted then because I was really your cadence was like perfect radio and I was just enjoying
was
that. Yeah.
See, you know, I'm very nice. Maybe I should any local radio stations. I don't know why I'm aiming for local radio. I should be aiming higher than that, shouldn't I? BBC Radio 1, you know, yeah. Radio 2, let's be serious.
Yeah. One extra, much. I think.
Definitely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So cop rock is, of course, the gritty police drama musical.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about, people who have other shows that are kind of associated with Steve Bocco and Hill Street Blues and the big one, which is, what's it called? You know, policeman in L.A. You're right though. It is a gritty police drama. That is the kind of way it's structured. But it is a musical, so every 5-6 minutes or so, quite randomly actually, it's not regular. They'll burst into song and pretend that it's completely normal. We opened this episode, which is the second episode, entitled Ill-Gotten Gains. And it had quite a long cold open.
Yeah.
That started with a rundown of everything that happened in the previous episode.
Yeah.
And it didn't feature any of the songs, apart from the chanting of We Got the Power.
Yeah.
Which is part of a rap, but on its own, you wouldn't know it was part of a song. You'd think it was just a kind of, rally of protest. Cry. So it doesn't acknowledge any of that, and then it goes to the credits eventually, and then I'm reminded that it's a musical again by these weird, and I just can't get over how weird it is that all the actors come in out of character and sit around the studio while the credits are playing. I know we talked about it last week, but on the last Cop Rock, but it's so weird.
Just to be clear,
yeah,
it was the intro that reminded you that it was a musical, not the entire solo song that's sung in the cold open.
Oh, is that in the cold open too?
Yeah.
In which case, we need to talk about that before we get into that. But the credits are weird. But yeah, so it has a quick rundown of everything. This is why it's confusing, because it's got a rundown of everything that it had last week.
Yeah.
Then you've got a cold open. Yeah. Then you've got the theme tune.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I've corrected it in my head that comes after the theme tune, but it isn't.
No. You get about a 6-7 minute cold open, and we're at the funeral of the cop that was killed the previous episode. Now, immediately, I was quite surprised that that this series isn't like an episodic.
No, I really thought it was going to be like a different storyline.
Yeah,
this week.
No, it's the whole episode is fully following. It's like a film that's been chopped up. Like it's everything is continuing from last week. It's not like things are going on in the background that overarch, but there's a different crime that happens every week. And it's following for some reason a singular storyline.
Yeah,
it's because it is obviously a very big influence on David Simon and The Wire.
I mean, no, but even in The Wire, you'd start with a different storyline and then you'd pick up the previous one and it would grow. Whereas this one does feel exactly like they pressed pause on the movie that they were making and then continued. So they're at the funeral for this cop who was killed at the beginning of the previous episode, which feels like ages ago because since then, the death of the cop has not only inspired a new plan by the mayor, but also been avenged by another bent copper, right?
Yeah.
We're in the season of bent coppers at the moment. The memes are doing my head in, having not seen Line of Duty.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm interested in one thing and one thing only, bent coppers. And that's exactly, you know, it's a recycled thing. Think it's a modern thing. It isn't. Coplock were doing it 150 years ago. Sorry.
In 1990. This episode, by the way, is called Ill-Gotten Gains because there's a character called Gains in it who the person that we're talking about to talk about now, who's the partner of the deceased cop that comes and gives a eulogy in song, he gets him and is annoyed, therefore yeah. Ill-Gotten Gains.
It's pretty shoehorned.
So shoehorned. But I do just want to reference the director of this episode. There's a director called Gregory Hoblit.
Right.
Because he just happened...
Hoblit, not Hobbit.
Mm-hmm. Hoblit. And he just happens to have directed one of my favourite films, which is the film Primal Fear with Richard Gere and Edward Norton.
Oh!
Terrific, terrific film. If anyone hasn't seen it, I really recommend it. I think that was the film, maybe even more than Fight Club, that I realised, like, Edward Norton is in a class of his own as an actor.
I mean, would you say that there are, you can see early Hoblit in this episode? Mm. Like, there are a lot of kind of hallmarks that then, you know, were developed and shown in Primal Fear?
Yeah, definitely.
I think for me, probably what you were thinking of was when the saxophone breaks out in the middle of the funeral, right?
The surprise saxophonist comes out.
Very Hoblit.
I thought it was Mandy Patinkin for a second.
But on a saxophone.
Yeah, because he's got
the same beard.
Yeah. Saxophone music comes in, and then you get this incredibly long song, a love song to his deceased partner.
Which is weird, isn't it? Because you'll never know how much I loved you. It's a love song, and then eventually a chorus comes in, kind of towards the end of the song, where he says, I loved you like a brother. And then you go, okay, it's kind of platonic. But also what's weird is we had a courtroom song in the first episode where there was a gospel choir.
Yeah.
And now you've got a funeral in a church and no gospel choir. You just have a few family members oohing and ahhing, but no one's in, like...
No, you do kind of hear what sounds like one, but you never see it.
Yeah, they're never featured. I'm like, you could feature them because this is actually a church. That would make sense. It wouldn't make sense if it was in a courtroom, which is what you did last episode.
Right, so I've got a question for you coming out of this, because all throughout the song, it keeps cutting to all the different cast members in the congregation looking very upset and forlorn and serious. And I want to ask you, in the world of the series, does everyone else know that they're singing? Are they seeing someone up there singing, or are they seeing someone speaking a eulogy, but it's song for us? Because they weren't reacting as if he was singing.
No.
They were watching someone give quite a serious eulogy.
In this song, that's exactly what I thought. They're listening to a eulogy and kind of nodding along and occasionally oohing and ahhing, but essentially the song is for us. Yeah. For them, it's a eulogy. Yeah, that's what I got.
I'm confused by the rules of the
world. Because there aren't any.
Right.
The world building is really difficult in this because you don't know what the rules are.
Yeah.
What are the rules? But it was like a Sam Cooke song.
Yeah.
I felt like I felt like it was a Sam Cooke song because it kind of was, but with really bad lyrics. You've not gone, you've just gone away. You know the Lord works in such mysterious ways.
Yeah.
It's just so weird and general and kind of shoehorned and bizarre. Yeah. So it wasn't a great start. You're quite right. Then we go to the credits, right?
Yeah. Just one final thing I want to talk about this song is the choice of having a saxophone solo
and then
not using
a saxophone. You're absolutely right.
He comes in at the beginning before the song, and you never see him again.
But
he came in
as if he was dressed like he was in a kind of 80s music video.
Yeah.
Like it was a solo in a Billy Joel concert, right? But the actual sax line made me think of film noir. Made me think of like, oh, we're going on a dark street corner and Humphrey Bogart's going to put a cigarette out or something. and then none of that happened. You
but
know?
You like, and it's very structured, like, you know, like a Springsteen-y street band sax solo, and it like builds, and you get the crescendo of the sax for about 20 seconds of just saxophone. And all they do is keep the camera on Rose, the character that's singing. But he's not singing at this point. He's just listening to a saxophone that they refuse to shoot for us. And I don't know why, because he's there. They've paid a saxophonist to come in.
Yeah.
And then they don't show him ever again throughout the whole song.
You're absolutely right. They just kind of forget about it. Yeah, and then we have the credits. And and you pointed out that there's something that we watched recently that has the cast come in and kind of watch the song from the thing being made.
Yeah,
which is what this credit is, out of character.
It's like, is that a reference to Cop Rock? Because it's the only other time I've ever seen it done, but that would be very odd.
Which was, and it was called...
They Came Together.
Amy Poehler.
Yeah, Paul Rudd.
And Paul Rudd, kind of mock rom-com. Very, very, very funny. Well worth seeing if you're in a silly mood. But yeah, I think that's the only time it's kind of done.
Yeah.
And anyway, after all that, we kind of go back and we focus on this episode quite largely on the captain of the police department, played by Larry Johnson. And he is doing an investigation into the murder of the cop killer by LaRusso. He shot the suspect who they think murdered the cop who we've just seen the funeral of in cold blood. He was handcuffed and he just shot him point blank. Obviously, that's murder. So he knows that that's what's happened and he's trying to get to the truth. Meanwhile, the forensic pathologist played by Ron McClarty, he is covering for LaRusso and has kind of lied about the forensic evidence, which we know already, right? Yeah. We've known all this in the last episode, but that's the story of this episode, is that we already know, but in a bit more detail.
Yeah.
And I just think that it's absolutely pointless, really, in terms of moving the plot along. It doesn't.
Yeah. I just want to go just back to the intro again, because, so obviously last episode was the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And as in a lot of cases, things often change, casting especially, from pilot to episode two.
Yeah.
And so they replaced Ernie Hudson with Vondi Curtis Hall, who you'll probably know best. He played the captain in the Baz Luhrmann Romeo and Juliet. So if you watch the intro, they've really badly put him in, because every time it shows him, he's like reacting to someone, but no one's like there.
He's not actually there.
Yeah.
Oh, great. I'm so sorry. I missed that.
Yeah. No, it's really good. Really, really good. So I enjoyed that. But not also nice to see Vondi Curtis Hall, because he's, I think he's brilliant in Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah. He's a good actor. Great voice. Great rich voice. So we then go and follow not the captain, but the police chief.
Yeah.
He is gone to the mayor.
Yeah. Mayor Plank.
Mayor Plank, who has got something special about her hair going on.
No, I'm...
You just want to talk about this for the whole hour, don't you?
I'm now convinced that this is a deliberate gag, because we mentioned it, those of you who listened to the last episode, you'll remember we talked about her hair quite a lot in the last episode, that it was comically big.
It was huge.
It's now three times the size of what it was last episode, which was already too big. It's now like, I burst out laughing when the camera went, like, it looks like an airplane Naked Gun, like, sight gag.
Yeah, well, every time they cut back, it gets bigger.
I'm convinced now that this is a joke, but I'm gonna keep watching out for it every episode.
But if it was Police Academy, then Naked Gun, but it doesn't have that vibe. I don't know what the rules are.
No.
I don't know whether they know.
It's weird that it doesn't have that vibe when it's a musical cop show and it doesn't seem to have any self-awareness.
Yeah, it's utterly bizarre.
Yeah.
And then the mayor puts pressure on him to save face for the police force.
Yeah, so she's saying that she's getting heat from her black constituents.
Yeah.
Because obviously this, you know, young black guy was killed by the bent cop.
Yeah.
And the police said, come. It's very like The Wire. And Because you get the world, you get the different world, you get the political, what's happening in the political world.
Yeah, yeah.
The pressure. I honestly don't think there would have been a Wire if there hadn't been a Cop Rock.
David Simon, if you're listening, I know you're a big fan, get in touch, let us know. Mm-hmm. Maybe you want to come guest on next episode of Cop Rock.
Could you imagine how amazing that would be, having David Simon
reacting
to Cop Rock?
Yeah.
It would be
incredible. And if you'd like to hear that, get on Twitter and petition him.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you can get past the Piers Morgan spat that he's currently dealing with. So the chief comes out of the mayor's office after being kind of scolded to find out something about it. And that's why he puts the captain onto this investigation.
This is, without hyperbole, the greatest line that's ever been written in the history of literature, theatre, television, cinema.
I mean,
it's a masterpiece. And
I'm gonna do it for you now.
Do it for us. Yeah.
It used to be that a woman was like a horse. Saddle them up, they never complained. Ride them till they drop, and then shoot them between the eyes.
Right. Now, even in 1990.
What on earth?
I'm not sure that's okay to say. I'm not sure that's ever been okay to say.
Well, no, of course it isn't okay to say, but to the point where the writers obviously know that they're writing a sexist chief, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But also, I don't think it makes sense. Like, you saddle them up and they never complain. You ride them till they drop and then shoot them between the eyes. Like, no, you wouldn't. Why would you?
He loses his way halfway through.
He gets carried away in the cowboy metaphor.
Yeah.
And it becomes Lassie, but also, oh, sad, I've got to shoot my horse. Like, I mean, there's a lot going on there.
There's so much going on.
Very toxic.
It's such a weird line.
And it's all uninterrupted. It's not part of a conversation. He's just pacing up and down pacing two steps and then turning, two steps and then turning, very frantically. And then I forgot that in his office, he's got a shooting range.
Yeah.
So he goes into his office and then shoots a cardboard cutout of the mayor with a shotgun. But he liked the mayor before, didn't he?
Yeah, it's good.
But he had it queued up. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah. But also, what's he annoyed? He's annoyed that he actually has to deal with corruption within the police, which actually... It's
reflected very often in The Wire. They want to hush it up.
Yeah. He's rules, isn't he?
The parallels are... he is. He's absolutely rules. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the parallels are getting bigger and bigger as we go through. See if you can keep count at home. Between Cop Rock and The Wire. So we have that. And then we have the burglary scene, right?
Yeah.
Which feels like it's going to be important. But don't worry, it isn't.
No.
It's not at all. There's a burglary in an LA house, like a Beverly Hills mansion.
Yeah.
Where the Hispanic maid has been attacked and hit on the head. And they've gone in and they've stolen some artwork. A David Lynch.
Yeah.
A famous art by David Lynch. Yeah. I mean, in '93,
he does do an art.
Was he in the early days? Was he known for that? I don't know.
He's not particularly known for it, but yeah, he is an artist as well. I mean, he's kind of, you can tell that from his films.
Yeah, he's,
But
an odd one to show that someone's rich.
A joke that they're all called David.
Maybe there's a joke in there somewhere. I don't know.
I was also quite surprised because I never think of Hockney as being like that big outside of like Europe. He's never really talked about in American like shows that talk about art and artists. I've never heard Americans talk about Hockney, so I was quite.
Yeah, I don't. Maybe he is bigger over there than you realize. I mean, I like lots of David Hockney, but the one that I've heard about and looked at most is his stained glass in the Westminster Abbey.
Oh, really?
And I just don't think it's very good. I think it's my least favourite thing about Hockney.
I think A Bigger Splash is the thing I always
I love Bigger Splash.
Think of.
Great.
Yeah.
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 Really like that.
Yeah, really cool.
Is the film based on that painting?
On that painting?
Because the aesthetic of that film is very Hockney-esque.
The Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great movie.
It is a great movie.
But it's set in that on that swimming pool, isn't it?
Right. It's based on the paint.
painting.
I've never known a film based on a painting, but it must be.
We're so far away from Cop Rock now, aren't
right.
we?
So there's a burglary scene. It's still a load of paintings.
Yeah.
And then now, this woman does an amazing performance.
Is she like the realtor?
No, she's the wife.
Right.
She's the partner of the guy who's complaining about the paintings. She lives there.
That's what I thought, but her performance is so like detached from the stakes of the situation that have happened. Like her house has been, but that's like, oh, she's someone like from the law firm or the insurance firm, or she's like the real estate agent.
She's playing highly strung Annette Bening in American Beauty.
Yeah,
that's precisely what she's. If you haven't watched it, that's what she's doing. Maybe Annette Bening based her character in American Beauty on this episode of Cop Rock, and we found another influence that this episode's.
Yeah.
God, it's all, they all fit together, don't they?
Yeah, so she's kind of talking as if she's in a rush to get to somewhere else and she doesn't really want to be dealing with the cops and showing them around about the crime scene.
No, she's annoyed that her husband isn't taking...
Yeah.
So that's what she's playing, that's but what she playing. Should be playing well, is, I wish my husband wasn't such a wet flannel.
Yeah. I'm going to have to
deal with everything because you're too upset.
Yeah.
So I'm upset too, but at least I'll deal with it, right? You know, useless men. That's kind of, I think, what the intention is.
Yeah.
And then she goes upstairs.
Yeah.
And she shouts at the cops.
Well, she doesn't.
No, she doesn't. No, specifically, she doesn't.
She doesn't shout at them. She speaks in the same level of volume the whole time that she's in this episode. But at some point says, oh, sorry, I shouldn't be yelling at you, to the cop.
And you said that like you weren't. Like, you weren't.
Yeah, you weren't. You said that in this exactly the same level of volume as the previous thing you said that you apparently thought was yelling.
And then she says,
"That was irrelevant."
Oh, I just need to the reason I'm getting angry with you and taking it out on you, which she wasn't, but she explains is because she just needs some time to get away from it all. And I'm like, from the burglary that's just happened. And do you think the police are going to help you with that?
Are you asking
for leave? Do you work for them now? Like, it was really confusing. And then she says, do you guys know Machu Picchu?
Yeah.
And they don't respond. And then she walks off and that's the end of that.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Yeah. I don't know what's going on there.
And then we get another song.
Yeah.
And you know that the song's coming because you get the loudest musical intro I've ever heard in my life. It is 5 times louder than the dialogue that they're trying to speak over the top of that. I was like, you're drowning them out with this music going.
But it's also a bar. It's the loudest and shortest intro. It was bam, 2, 3, 4, and we're in a song. Okay, whoa.
Yeah.
So I need time. I need time to readjust again. I'd forgotten again that it was a musical
by this time. Yeah.
And I've already watched an episode, several episodes of it in my life. And I all forgot again. And then it shocks you into it, wakes you up, grabs you by the scruff of the neck and says, this is a musical. And then they sing about how, as kind of normal cops, they're not used to experiencing the high life and they kind of play around in the bedroom that's the crime scene as if they were rich, singing, this is what the good times look like, baby, we're a sexy pair.
What is this song?
Right.
What is this song? I will say...
It's dreadful.
I, for a while, thought that I didn't mind the line, it's a long way from the thin blue line up to this pleasure dome. I thought it was quite a good line. And then I thought about it again. I thought, it's not...
It's not a good line.
No, none of it's good. I thought that one line might have been okay. And then on reflection, no, it's all bad.
And they just say that again in different ways. That line's just repeated. It's a long way from the cop shop to just from the station to the LA. Like, it's not that long. It can't be that long because it's in your corner of LA. Like, you've only come to this house call because it's in your jurisdiction, which means you drive around this geographical area all the time.
I think you misunderstood the song.
No, but it's the analogy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Of going, it's a long way, but also it's a long way because our police station isn't as fancy as this mansion, which also doesn't make sense. Well, of course it isn't. It's a functioning police station, a municipal building. It shouldn't be. But it's neither in geographical terms doesn't make sense. But I think that's what the lyric's aiming at, is that it's far away, both in distance and in the reality.
I don't think distance has anything to do with it.
Maybe that's just me then.
Yeah, I don't think that. I think it's
all right. Like, it's I'm taking my hands up.
But I did keep thinking of the School of Rock. It's a long way to the top if you want to rock and roll.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
If you want to rock and roll, that's good. I would like to see.
It's what I like sometimes about cop rock is that often the songs remind me of better songs. I just can think about those songs instead of listening to the songs.
We've got a lot of that. We've got a couple of those coming
up.
Yeah,
we do. Yeah, we do.
But so, the important thing is that what is this song doing? What's the function of the song? The brief, I'm assuming, was we need a song that lets us know that these cops are both working class and aren't used to this kind of level of luxury, and also remind the audience that they have a thing for each other.
Yeah, okay.
Because we know that these partners have a kind of a romantic connection.
I was confused, and this is me misremembering, but I swore that in the last episode it was a different male cop.
I thought it was different. No, I thought that too.
Okay.
But I think he's just got different hair.
I was like, that's not the same guy, right?
But it's the same character because they're partners,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah, that's the whole thing. Yeah.
But she's married to the pathologist, and he sang the sad song.
Yeah.
In the chat. Yeah. So. Yeah, I think that was the function of the song, and it was just really, really weird. This is what the good life looks like. This is what a good time feels like, I think was the next lyric.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is the worst song of the episode.
I don't know. We'll do a vote at the end.
We'll see. So that happens. And I've got not the chief, but the other,
captain.
The captain.
Yeah.
Going into the pathologist's office. Because there's a really weird line. He goes in and he says, Ralph, his name, the pathologist, says, Ralph, can I talk to you for a second? And Ralph says, but if you don't mind, I've got to keep working while we're talking. Which feels like a justification for the blocking that you're explaining to the audience why you're... I don't think... It's a really weird, unnecessary thing to say.
I think it's pointing out the fact that he doesn't want to make eye contact and lie to his captain.
Right.
So he deliberately turns his back for about 30 seconds and then does the rest of the scene to him, and he's fine with it. But I think that might have been what it was getting at. But yeah, we could have just... That all could have been unsaid.
Yeah.
Like, in fact, it felt like a stage direction. Yeah, you're right.
Because the majority of fictional film, TV, plays... So it looks visually interesting. Most people are doing other things whilst they have conversation. They form themselves. I've never heard that need to be explained before.
Instead of stopping.
It's very rare that you want something. In fact, in real life, it's quite rare that you just stop and have a conversation and stop everything else.
Yeah. Then I was also reminded of the fact that he says, you know, I've been 19 years in this business. I'm not going to, you know, lie to you. Don't accuse me of lying. Do you want my badge? No. Well, then leave me alone.
Yeah.
And I'm reminded that he's the most well-respected forensic pathologist in the unit and also has a really big house. And it's his wife who sings that song about how she's not used to the life of luxury. I'm like, you are though, aren't you? Because your house is massive. Like, your house is this, but without the paintings.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a really good point. She shouldn't be singing a song
that's
about it.
That's a really good point. Also, I don't want to go back to it, but also, like, the rooms were quite small in that. Like, it wasn't...
No, it didn't look that... If anything, I think her house is
bigger. I think her house is a better house.
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
And so that scene happens, and then there's a bit of weird explanation for two characters that I don't know very well. I think he's a new character, the guy who sings. Is he in?
Oh, Gaines. Yeah, so that's Gaines.
So Gaines, he's new.
Yeah, so he's now partnered with Rose, because obviously Rose's partner died, and we saw his funeral at the beginning.
And he's in a bad mood because of his grieving.
Bad mood because of all his grief.
Yeah.
You have the kind of driving... We're driving along... First day with Rose and Gaines as the new pairing, and Gaines is sings almost the whole of Heard It Through the Grapevine, almost the entirety of the song.
So much of it,
unaccompanied. So, and again, this brings me back to my earlier question about the singing in this world, because I found it very confusing in something that is a musical.
Yeah.
To have someone singing a real existing song,
yeah,
but as you would in real life, like just singing a song and you're referencing the fact that you're singing, when there's like six songs in every episode, none of which are referenced that they're songs.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't know how to process.
And also, if he was like, oh, I guess you heard it. Oh, I'm just singing a song, you know, I'm just being a cop singing a song. But no, he's like a great rock tenor. Yeah. Well, I get wondering how. I'm like, no, wait.
Yeah.
So you're, is this one of the songs? You're a professional singer, but you've decided to be a cop instead. And your hobby is that you sing, and this annoys Rose. Well, Rose just sang his all the way through a bloody funeral.
Yeah, because he says at one point, he turns around to Gaines and says, I can't stand cops who sing.
Yeah.
And I was like,
you're in the wrong world, aren't you? Universe,
did a 6-minute soul song.
Yeah.
Half an hour ago.
And also,
what are you talking about?
All Gaines references. Oh, I love all those, like the Four Tops, Gladys Knight and the Pips, Diana Ross, Motown's, Soul. And I'm like, I specifically thought that Rose song's very Sam Cooke. Like, you should get on.
Yeah.
If anything.
Yeah.
Because your musical tech, when you made improvise a song with a sax player and an invisible gospel choir at your friend's funeral for the eulogy, you picked his genre of music.
But this is what I mean. I don't think he did in the world. I don't
he
think...
He didn't.
He sang.
So he, that was an eulogy. Spoke he hates eulogy. Singing.
He hates singing. But we saw... as the audience...
So confusing.
No, I don't understand.
It was but also, because it went on for so long and he sang it so professionally,
I
wasn't sure if he was aware. I wasn't sure if Rose was hearing it. But wait, why wouldn't there be a band behind
him? Because he didn't react to it at all.
Completely no-sold it.
Yeah.
So, we know that they're not getting on all too well and he's winding them up. But this seems to be why the captain's put him with him.
Yeah.
Right? To cheer him up. I think it's not spoken about, but I think the story here is that Larry Johnson's gone, I'm going to put Gaines with Rose because he'll lighten him up again because he's such a nice, bright, kind of positive character and he's a force for good. And Rose needs that, even though it will wind Rose up a bit.
Yeah.
I think it's good. And Rose says, no, I'm not doing it. And the captain says, have it for a week. This happens, so that annoys him. Then we cut back to...
Well, you should say one of Prince's backing singers was called Rosie Gaines.
Do you think that's why they've done this?
It would be weird. Not any weirder than anything else.
There you go.
Show. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
That partnership and this storyline.
Yeah.
It's not a storyline. It's like a D plot. I don't know why it's there. It's inspired by that. That's a great fact.
But this is the main storyline. The main storyline of the episode isn't a storyline, because the main storyline of the episode, like you said, is just the storyline from the previous, but with a bit more, just repeating things.
There's no more information.
No, I was going to say more information. No, there isn't.
We learn nothing in this episode, just to be clear. We learn nothing new. But we do learn a little bit more about this kind of B-plot, which is the Beverly Hills Mansion robbery. Already, they've got a lineup of eight Hispanic robbers who may or may not be responsible, and the maid has got to identify them.
Now this...
And so we have a lineup scene.
This is incredible.
I've written, take that meets... Imagine take that, or like early Boyzone, meet Cell Block Tango from Chicago.
Yes,
By way of the Happy Numbers. By way of the Happy Mondays.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
I think that's the only way I could distill it.
Yeah.
You've got them dressed like they're in a boy band.
Yeah.
Or like New Kids on the Block would be the American version.
Yeah.
90s boy band. But with the back... But you know, The Usual Suspects is that specific lineup background.
Yeah,
they've borrowed the same one.
Yeah,
So I kind of expected them to go, give me the keys, you fucking cocksucker.
Yeah.
They burst into kind of song. And it's a real rip-off from Happy Mondays for like about 5 seconds.
Yeah. It is. It's that, weirdly, it's that like Manchester.
Like that's in it. They use that riff with that piano effect. Yeah. It's really bizarre. And they do this weird dance that kind of keeps... And I kept thinking it was going to stop. I was convinced this was going to be a short song. And it wasn't. It just kept going. And they all sing about how they're being picked on because they're Hispanic and being treated as if they've committed some quote-unquote terrible sin, even though they haven't. But then they also have... They are owning up to being criminals.
There was also a very weird filmic thing that happened where when this music came in and it did like, it was like, you know, when Roy Scheider sees the shark for the first time in Jaws and you get that thing where the focus pull goes in on his face, but the background goes out.
Yeah.
It was like that. Like it was like 2D almost. And then it like suddenly zoomed out, but there was all this depth. It was really weird.
It was a really weird effect. Quite and difficult I, thing to do. Yeah.
And I don't think it was wholly necessary.
Like, you've gone for a kind of a Spielberg auteur, you know, example of filmmaking. For me, it just reminded me of, you know, in the 90s, there were just a lot of music videos in boxes.
Yeah.
It was a bit like that.
Yeah.
It was like, they were kind of almost going to the camera. I also want to add, by
Jamiroquai, Virtual Insanity is
one
I'm thinking
of. Yes, a perfect example of when they kind of flirt with the camera. Yeah. And a lot of them.
P. Diddy one as well, I seem to remember as well. Him in a white box.
I think hip hop, it was big in hip hop. White box, yeah, definitely. But I thought, okay, well, hang on a sec. This is kind of a little bit Sharks and Jets kind of, you've got an Hispanic kind of gang singing and dancing and quite a lot of kind of like balletic movement in there. So I was like, it's a bit West Side Story reference here. And then I realised they were terrible dancers because none of them could turn and land in time together. No. Like every time they jeté, they were way out.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the most musical theatre thing I've ever said in my life, but but it's true. They were dreadful. Yeah. Like, why did you not cast professional dancers?
Yeah.
Like,
but I think the song lyrically was making reference to being racially profiled, right?
They were absolutely,
which is good.
Yeah, it was good, but then also they were saying they were criminals.
Yeah,
they were admitting that they were criminals, but they were also complaining about being racially profiled, which I thought was a bit weird.
Yeah, I thought justice was blind. You must be out of your mind. That was a good one. That was one of my favourites. But it is...
What does that mean?
It is very clear the influence this song had on people like Bad Bunny, people like Daddy Yankee, what's it called? Louis Fonsi, the Despacito. Like, the big kind of Latin hip-hop scene that's really exploding at the moment.
Yep.
Pitbull, obviously.
It's R&B and hip-hop, isn't it? Right, from, meshed together here.
From this song.
Yeah.
Pitbull's talked about it a lot.
Has he?
Yeah, he referenced this song multiple times in interviews. Said, he wouldn't be here without the Cell Block Tango Happy Mondays song.
I said that, knowing that he and Jennifer Lopez quite close, like, that would be interesting to see her do a Pitbull remixed Cell Block Tango. I'm sure she'd like that. It'd be a good dance challenge.
Very interesting.
Great.
But you just have Pitbull talking all over it, though, wouldn't you?
Yeah. And also, I don't like his voice.
Mr. Worldwide.
I don't know. It's not a nice sound, is it? He's like the Spanish Ja Rule. Kind of great song.
He's like the Spanish Ja Rule. Very good.
So that happens. And at the end of it, LaRusso, who is the corrupt cop killer, no, killer of the cop killer, he's murdered the suspect.
Killer of the cop killer.
The killer of the cop killer. And he gets to the bottom of it, which is, it was an inside job.
Yeah.
It was a friend of the Hispanic maid who said, or brother or something, and he said, just pretend that we robbed you, you can just let us in and then we'll, you know, escape with it all.
Yeah, because they, for some reason... the wife of the forensic scientist.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone's character's name. No. And she notices that the maid does know who it is, but says she doesn't know who it is.
Yeah, I don't know how she knows. Like, well, no, women's intuition?
They call it out as well.
Yes.
Yeah. LaRusso's like, what are you talking about? And she's like, yeah, no, I saw her. Look, sometimes when the cops are looking, she would look one way, and when we weren't looking, she'd look another. I was like, right, well, if you weren't looking, how do you know which way she was looking?
Like, yeah,
what
I don't.
You've just said is
you're a cop.
Utter nonsense.
It is. It's the quote-unquote women's intuition, which is, you know, a loaded patriarchal trope used to get writers out of holes.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That did happen quite a lot. Well, it still does. But yeah, it means nothing. And they find out, and then they go to the captain, and LaRusso says, hey, we solved the mystery. It was inside job. And he goes, how do you know? And he goes, well, we don't know, but, you know, I just asked her. It turns out she admitted the whole thing. He's like, did you intimidate her?
Yeah.
He's like, no, that they were intimidating. He's like, right, so I don't believe you. Yeah. I also know that you lied about killing a cop. And I'm like, it's a really good point. You've got no real evidence for this.
No. And also, But why keep him on? Because I feel like you're just not going to believe anything he says, and that's make it really difficult to do any police work.
And he says...
You're going to keep going, well, yeah, but you lied about killing that guy, so you're probably wrong.
Yeah.
You go, well, I can't do my job now then, can I?
No, and he does say, look, why don't you just put me in for a transfer? It'll be best for both of us. And he goes, no. He goes, oh, because you want to nail me for it. And he's like, yeah. Well, okay, see you later.
Yeah, yes!
I'm like, oh, I'm glad that the hero and the anti-hero, protagonist and antagonist are fully aware of each other's motives and plans here.
Yeah. We need to talk about the fact that he's called LaRusso because of Daniel LaRusso from
just
The Karate Kid.
Reminding me as another character. Yeah. Like, why did you pick a famous character name?
Yeah.
Why couldn't they have picked another name?
No.
Maybe it's just a very common LA Spanish name.
Meh.
Then we go back to them in the pub kind of celebrating this, right? And the captain comes down to the bar and talks to the wife of the pathologist who's helped solve this crime with her magic powers.
Yeah.
And takes her aside from the pool table and says, by the way, I think your husband's lying about the evidence.
What was the purpose of the whole burglary plot?
I have no idea. It was a big story.
Okay.
But it didn't contribute to the main story.
It didn't at all, did it?
No.
Didn't achieve anything.
No, that's why when it ended, I was like, oh.
How much in every episode do you think Brochko worked like outwards from the ideas for song set pieces? Because I feel like he went, I want to do a lineup boy band. And then the whole storyline had fitted to make that happen.
I think Brochko did the pilot.
Yeah.
I don't think he did anything else to do with this film. His fingerprints are not anywhere in this episode. The fact that you think that he even engaged with this, I find surprising. No way! It doesn't make any sense. The lines don't add up. The lyrics don't make sense. At least there were some good scenes in the first pilot. This one, there's not a single good bit of drama apart from any time Rod McClarty, who plays Ralph, the forensic, he's the best thing in it by a country mile for me.
Yeah.
I think he's excellent. And he also didn't have a song in this.
No.
But he had my favourite song,
but
even though that was weird when he sat in a chair the whole time. He acted it beautifully.
He did.
He's a great singer and actor. So I was a big fan of them. So then we cut back to, so just to be clear, he tells his wife, the other cop, that he thinks
Ralph's
he's lying, and you probably want to talk to your husband about that.
Yeah. But again, this is now, I think maybe the 8th or 9th conversation that someone's had with someone about Ralph lying on the forensic report. And remember, as the audience, we know that happened and saw him do it the conversation
the
in the last episode at the time. So again, but about 28% of this episode is conversations about whether Ralph did or didn't. And it's always pitched as if we don't know. And I'm like, have you forgotten that you told us that he did, that you showed us that he did?
I think the purpose of this episode is, in one sentence, is everybody learns that Ralph's lying. And I just don't know.
Yeah.
Because we know that as an audience. Why is it good for us to know that to see everyone else find it out? It's just not interesting, is it?
No.
Yeah, it's very bizarre. But we go back to Rose and Gaines.
We when we were at drama school, we had a director called Tony James, didn't we?
Yeah, and we did.
He could only ever direct one person at a time and have to watch them. Yeah. And I feel like that's what's happened here. Whoever's written this episode has gone, I can only concentrate on one character telling that information to one other character. Yeah. So we're just going to have to write that 8 times.
I liked the way Tony did that, though, in the end.
Yeah, well, although you certainly knew your lines.
It was a very boring rehearsal process, but we all knew the blocking of the lines backwards.
Yeah.
Because we'd done it however many times. There were 6 of us in the cast.
Yeah.
So we had to do everything 6 times before it was set.
Yeah.
Why could he only look at one of us at a time?
Nonsense.
I'm going to ask him about that. I'm going to see him on Wednesday.
You are, yeah.
Yeah. And I know I'm going to say, how are you doing, Tony? I haven't seen you in a few years. And he's going to say, have you heard? Yeah. And I'm going to have no idea what he's on about. And it's going to be a non-piece of gossip.
Yeah.
But he'll frame it like it is.
Yeah.
Have you heard? The canteen's changing its nuts. Okay. Stop making it so dramatic. So we go back to Gaines and Rose.
Yeah.
And they've been on the road and he's been annoyed by the singing. And Gaines says, I've just driven past a car with its lights left on.
Yeah.
We should stop and, break into the car and turn the light. He just says we should stop and turn the lights off because otherwise they'll have a flat battery.
Yeah.
And Rose says, it doesn't bother me. He says, yeah, because you're not the one with a flat battery, but it would be a kind thing to do.
Yeah.
And I think, that's lovely. Well done, Gaines. So he gets out the cop car of the boot, a specific car robbing device.
Yeah.
And Rose, for some reason, snatches it off him.
Yeah.
Let me have a go at it.
Yeah.
And then can't do it and scratches the car.
Mm-hmm.
And then says to Gaines, now look what you made me do.
Yeah.
Like, it was in no way his fault.
No.
Now, what we're trying to do is, as I think the episode's trying to show, that Rose is a particularly grumpy griever.
Yeah. Yeah, grumpy griever.
Grumpy griever.
Grumpy griever.
You know, those who grieve grumpily.
Yeah.
I much prefer those who grieve gracefully. Graceful grievers. Are you
a graceful griever or a grumpy griever? Let us know.
Everyone falls into either one of those two categories. What do you think you are?
Grieb.
Yeah.
Green beans.
Again. If you haven't seen We Came Together, you should.
Yeah.
So that I just hate Rose now, right? I really hate.
Yeah, him. I don't think that's what they wanted, but that's what's happened.
I don't feel sorry for him. I just think he's a dick.
Yeah.
And then the guy comes out of his he set the car alarm off.
Yeah.
And the guy comes out of his house, and I'm like, wait, why didn't you just knock on his door? Yeah. Why were you breaking into the car in the first place?
Yeah.
I kind of went with him on that, and I don't know why.
No, nonsense.
Because clearly it was just parked outside his house. He came out and said, why are you ruining my car?
Yeah.
And then Rose threatens to arrest him and gets all violent with him.
And then Gaines comes in and defuses it and says that they'll pay for the work to the car.
Yeah.
And then that's what kind of makes Rose warm to Gaines. And I'm like, but you're in the... It's like it's played like Rose is like, oh... Maybe you're all right after all, because you just saved me from the terrible thing that I've done. That I was about to do. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's,
I don't know.
It's really weird.
Gaines buttons the scene with, now, was that cool or was that cool? Yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah.
I don't think you'd describe it as cool.
No, you wouldn't describe it as cool. I also want to remind everyone, this episode is called Ill-Gotten Gaines. And this is not the second of two scenes that he's in. And this is
it.
We don't see him again.
It?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is like the E or F plot.
Yeah, it's...
And yet the episode is apparently about this partnership.
I know more about the dancing scenes. Hispanics than I do about...
And they have more screen time than Gaines in this episode.
And they were only in for the one song.
Yeah.
But that's how it was a very long song.
It was.
Yeah, so that kind of ends. That's the end of that storyline. I think at some point I'm going to go back to the police chief and the mayor.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
No.
Not going to go there, are we?
No. And it's a shame because I wanted to see how much bigger her hair would be.
Again. Grown again. Do you think it just, maybe it wasn't a wig? Like, maybe it's her hair with hairspray and they just let it grow in the 3 months it took for them to get a go on the pilot to make the second episode.
It's growing outwards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it does.
Circumferentially.
Outwards was better.
Yeah, it was.
Then we go back to the station and... He says Rose says I don't want to be with Gaines anymore.
Yeah,
and yeah. Larry Johnson, and I'm like, hasn't he warmed?
As yeah,
they've been through this.
Yeah,
was that cool? Or was that cool? So okay, so he didn't warm to him. So maybe that. So yeah. I don't know what the purpose of all of that was.
No, yeah,
says you said I could have a week and then I could change my partner.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been a week. It's been a day.
It's been
a,
yeah.
And he goes, no. What part of no don't you understand? So we know that they're going to be together.
Yeah.
Also, there's a weird moment when Larusso's partner says that he wants a divorce.
Yeah.
I.e. they don't want to be partners anymore.
I was confused because there's two storylines happening that are essentially the same thing, which is yeah. partners not wanting to be yeah. partners. And it happened one yeah. scene off directly after the next one. Yeah. Two cops. Talking about not wanting to be partners anymore.
Yeah.
And then Rose goes, I don't want this partner anymore. And I'm like, no, yeah. Why? Why are we doing this other? Already? With two other characters.
And I'm thinking, oh, well, we haven't had a song for a while.
Yeah.
So we go back to, it's nighttime now.
Yeah.
And pathologist Ralph and his wife, the cop who helped out with the Bel Air mansion case or solved it with the magic powers, rather, she says, ah, I know that you're lying about this case, right? Yeah. The cop killer. And he goes, oh no, I'm not lying. And she goes, no, I think you are. And he goes, yeah, you're right, I am.
Yeah, now I quite like this possibly.
Mm-hmm.
if she's doing what I hope she's doing, which is because she plays it like quite over the top and very like immediately makes the decision to not trust him and
mm-hmm.
kind of uses very strong words about yeah not being able to believe anything he says anymore
mm-hmm.
and you've changed in my eyes, you're not the same person, you know, it's like quite a sharp change.
Yeah,
now either it's bad acting or I was like, is this her being like, I finally have an excuse to be able
leave
to
you.
Leave you for my partner because I'm not, because it, this is, and this is quite a common thing. Like I've had quite a lot of friends, like and people in kind of my family, people other people know that have stayed in relationships for ages because they've gone, oh well, someone hasn't done anything wrong, so
mm-hmm.
I don't feel justified to leave that person.
Yeah,
even if you go, it doesn't feel right or it's not working out. A lot of people think that they have to have a reason to leave someone, like
yeah.
such and such cheated on me or such and such. And so that is quite human. And I quite like if she's playing it, like, cause she's actually quite almost excited that she's got this reason now to be able to leave him. And that I quite like. I don't know if that is what it is.
Right. Let's say it is.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm with you. I like that
yeah.
a lot. He says, I'm going to go and sleep downstairs for tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, okay, thank you. And then on her own,
mm-hmm.
in the bedroom,
mm-hmm.
she sings a song
yeah.
all about honesty and how her dad
yeah.
never told a lie in his life. And that's why she fell for Ralph as an honest
yeah.
man. And now that he isn't anymore, maybe that's not what love is at all. And she does this for the benefit of no one. She's
no.
just singing to herself. So I think it might just be a bit of bad acting and bad writing.
It's weird... cop rock. Because
yeah,
it both episodes so far now, I've gone, ah, oh, all of the kind of spoken dialogue and scenes, all are just kind of there to get from one song to the next song, and the songs are the big set pieces and visually the most interesting. But yet somehow, the show, I think, each episode would be better without the songs.
Mm-hmm.
But the spoken dialogue isn't really there to do anything. But yeah, I still think it would be stronger if it was without the songs.
Rewritten. Yeah. it would be a gritty drama
show. It would be better.
If it was a different show, it would be better. Yeah, that's exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
The thing is, the reason why this is a problematic thing, right, is because neither version of what we're saying works.
Yeah.
Because the Cop Rock wants us to like this and feel sorry for this cop for her being in a loveless relationship.
Yeah.
But actually, the only person they built sympathy for is the pathologist, because he was the one who said, oh, you know, I'm really lucky to have you, even though I'm kind of overweight and ugly and I can't believe I have you. I'm so lucky to have you. Isn't that amazing? And he's never told a lie in his life up until this moment, which is to save the reputation of the force and the cops. So he is kind of... I'm not saying what he's doing is right. Of course it isn't. But he's the more sympathetic character up until this point, because we know that she's kind of cheating on him with this other guy.
Yeah.
They're kissing in the car when he drops her off after work.
Do you know what is interesting about that song that she sings? Which, as you quite rightly said, is all about the fact that her father never told a lie.
Yeah, starting with this line, what was it? Maybe this isn't what love is. Oh, I've got to find the... locked inside a seated chest, a picture of my mum and daddy's wedding.
Yeah.
Which is the weirdest way to open a song ever.
Yeah, very long sentence.
Really
to sing.
Weird. Yeah.
But what is also strange is that the argument that they have before she sings this song, she specifically says, "My whole life, I thought everyone lied, and that's just what people did until I met you." And then she sings a song about how her dad growing up never lied. And I was like, wait a minute. That's different to what you said 1 minute before.
Yeah, and you're saying maybe that isn't what love is. What, daddy issues? No, it isn't. Of course it isn't. You should never marry someone because they remind you of your father and you idolise them to the point you singing songs about them being in a seated chest. What a load of old nonsense.
Yeah.
It is a load of old nonsense. And I have to say, she doesn't sing it very well.
She doesn't.
So that's the end of that.
But is that the one that is It's a Heartache?
No, this is coming up. We've got another song.
Do we?
Yeah.
I've completely forgotten.
After this, we go to Larry Johnson, the captain's house. And we meet his wife and his child.
Sorry.
Which we've never met before.
Yeah.
Larry Johnson plays the good captain.
Yeah.
It's another spin-off of The Good Doctor and The Good Wife. and also, I remember this scene because this is where you scratched an itch for me that I was trying to work out of who he reminded me of.
Oh, yeah.
And you worked it out.
Oh, that he's got Michael Douglas's voice.
He's got Michael Douglas's voice.
Like speaking voice. Exact speaking voice.
Particularly like Wall Street Michael Douglas, where he's like, when Michael Douglas does the thing of, if you're trying to play powerful and threatening, he lowers his voice.
Yeah.
He does. That's what Larry Johnson is doing for the whole of this.
Yeah.
Which doesn't see his character, but you know, it's. I'm glad that we found got to the bottom of that. So we meet his wife and his kid, and his wife's like, "Oh, how was your day?" And he's like, "Oh, difficult. How was your day?" And she goes, "No, it was fine until I decided to quit the art class."
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
Okay. I've not met you before. I don't care.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Oh, you shouldn't have done that." And she's like, "Well, when I realised it was going to cost $2,000 for the art course," I'm like, "Okay, you definitely shouldn't be doing that. Why is it costing you that much money?"
I just want to jump on something you said there, because this is absolutely evidenced time and time again in this series, is that they don't seem to understand that if we haven't been told something about a personal relationship or a story, we can't emotionally invest in it.
Yeah.
They seem to just assume that we'll be able to emotionally invest in things that we know nothing about.
Yeah.
Like, just thinking back to the top of the episode with the funeral. Like, remember, like, he got killed, Rose's partner, at the beginning of the pilot episode. So we have never seen any of Rose and his dead partner. So therefore, that song where he's like, "Oh, I never told you how much I loved you." I'm like, "Well, I don't know if you did or didn't, because we never saw you together."
Yeah.
This is the second episode.
Yeah.
And he died at the beginning of the first one. And it, time and time again in this series, you get something that you do need more information about. Otherwise, you just go, I don't know, and I don't care.
And also, why are you kind of having to shoehorn this in with bad exposition that we're, as you quite rightly say, unable to emotionally invest in?
This,
when you've just wasted two plot lines on a Beverly Hills mansion robbery that didn't go anywhere, and a friendship, the Gaines and Rose friendship that doesn't go anywhere.
If I was like channel hopping, and I happened to flick onto this scene, I would assume I was in like season 3 of a television series. Like, that's how much it feels like we have already supposedly been told about Johnson's wife and everything.
Yeah.
And we haven't. This is the first time we've
seen
his home
life. We don't know who you are and we don't care.
We barely know who he is.
Yeah.
We certainly don't know his wife or her art class. But the conversations they're having and the way it's always like, oh, this is a story that you've grown up with for many years.
Yeah.
You know, it's the Johnsons.
The Johnsons, yeah. I think... there's also this... So they're playing heavily on the fact that a police captain's wage is dreadful. And I'm like, really? In downtown LA? Are you struggling that much? Because your house is pretty cool and your job's pretty senior and you've got one kid and like, I think you could be fine. She's like, yeah, and the washing machine, that was going to be cheaper to buy a new one than fix. So I can't afford to do my art classes, and that's just, you know, the way it is because we're a hard old working class blue collar family. I'm like, well, you're doing all right. I don't think you should be so down on yourself. And also, if you worked, maybe.
Yeah.
Like... And then it turns out that she's given up her dreams of being an artist in order to marry the cop, and that's just something she's got to be happy with. Anyway, so he has his beer, and she says, "Right, I'm gonna go and get the door. I'm gonna go get the kids. Sorry, you wash your hands."
Yeah.
So I was just saying, it does happen quite often, but I don't know why adults need to tell other adults to wash their hands before dinner.
Yeah. So it's very American, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's very American. Go wash up before dinner.
Yeah.
All the time. I think my parents ever said that to me.
No, I never had it either. You just did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think a minute ago you accidentally said Downton LA rather than Downtown LA, and I've just been thinking about what a great spin-off that would be.
Maggie Smith. Yeah. But as Norman Desmond.
Yeah.
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 Be great.
Someone make that.
Downton LA.
Downton LA.
I mean, BBC America.
Yeah.
Probably get onto that.
Get on it.
So he goes, takes his beer to the sink and looks out the window, and we see this kind of silhouette of the back of his head, and then some music comes in.
It does, and they do time it well in terms of every single time they manage to time it, they seem to know how long it takes to forget that it's a musical.
It's
every single song.
I thought it was going to be underscore.
Yeah, I forgot it's a musical. Yeah.
But also... What's weird is they stayed on that silhouette at the back of his head for half the first verse.
Yeah,
so we didn't see him sing.
No.
We just heard some cheesy kind of 80s-esque.
It's a voice that you wouldn't expect it to come out of him as well. So I was like, it's someone else's singing.
Kind of a bit Joe Cocker, isn't it?
It is a bit Joe Cocker, a bit like Michael Bolton.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of that
very
white
raspy,
soul.
Raspy, gravelly, white soul.
So when he kind of turned around and he halfway through a sentence, I was like, oh no, I need to see, we need an establishing shot of you singing.
Yeah.
Cause now it's like, you're singing along with the soundtrack.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And again, you're right. I've forgotten at this point because I've had 8 minutes without any songs. Completely forgot there's a musical again. Every time. out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I don't know how they do it. But then he sings this song about how difficult it is being a cop and having no money. And she sings a song. She says, oh, well, you know what it's like? I wash my dreams away with the dishes. I'm like,
yeah,
but it's my job. I'm like, look, anyone out there, full-time mum, absolutely, it is a full-time job.
Yeah.
But it doesn't stop you from also having a career if you want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I do think you've got the money to be able to do, like... At this point in the 90s in LA, I think you're earning quite an okay wage.
Yeah.
I have an issue with them.
And again, it's a nice house.
Yeah.
Like,
he's a captain. He's like one of the most senior... He's in charge of the whole station.
Yeah.
The only person above him is the chief and then the mayor.
Yeah.
Like, he's doing fine.
Which is the same power structure as in The Wire.
It is in the same...
He's Daniels, isn't
In
he?
Fact, actually, we already know, right? Because you have the... You have Rawls.
Yeah.
And he's on, like, $74,000 a year.
Yeah.
As the captain of that stage. So...
Yeah.
We've got a good idea.
Yeah.
At this stage, in 93, Larry Johnson, captain, is probably on about, I don't know, 65.
Yeah.
65K.
I'd say so.
He's doing fine.
He's doing absolutely fine.
Especially when you're dealing with poverty-stricken kids. But also he talks about the fact that, like, and you never know how you're going to go. Like, is your life going to be taken by a gun or a needle or a knife? I'm like, okay.
Yeah, so yeah,
sorry. Gun, maybe, caught in a crossfire, yeah. Killed by a criminal, maybe.
Yeah.
Needle? I think that's on you,
yeah,
isn't it?
That's, yeah.
If you think life's so difficult that you might turn to heroin, I haven't got much sympathy for you. And then what? Does it go gun, needle, then knife?
Yeah. Like, gun, needle, knife.
Is that you stabbing yourself because you got to the end of... I don't know what I'm following. I don't know what the character arc is here.
No.
But they sing for a long time. And it's not very pleasant.
No, but it's a heartache.
But it starts... Yes, you're right. Absolutely. Yeah. The beginning of it was, it's a hard life. Baby, it's a hard life. Yeah. Like, okay, you're not even pretending, are you?
No.
Hard life instead of heartache, of course. And also quite a raspy singer, right? Whoever did that song.
Bonnie Tyler. Yeah.
Yeah. So it kind of... It aurally rings those bells as well. Pardon the pun. But the chorus of this is it's going to be
Stewart as well, I think.
Well, Stewart. Oh yeah, maybe maybe he did it. It's going to be all right. Nothing can go wrong. What with when God is so strong is the lyric. Now I had to reread that.
Yeah.
It's going to be all right. Nothing can go wrong. What with when God is so strong. That is god awful. You can't do that. You can't write that. What with when God is so strong?
Because what with means when, right?
Yeah.
You don't need...
What?
You can't...
Yeah.
You can't have both.
You don't need both and you can't have both.
What with God being so strong? When God is so strong. You can't have what with when God is so strong.
It's going to be all right when God is so strong. Also is it's going to be all right.
The tenses are all
wrong. If or because, but the tense is completely broken.
Yeah.
And also, I didn't know you were so religious.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you don't know anything about them.
I know, but I'm absorbing the fact that they're broke but not
very
broke.
Quickly.
An artist who resents being a housewife but is happy being a housewife because it's her job. He seems to be quite a good father, but he's worried about whether he can actually make a difference. Sometimes he feels like he's just dusting the machine. Which is not her phrase ever. Anyone's amused. And then it turns out that actually it's all about their relationship with Jesus. I don't care.
I was also trying to work out if they were if there was any kind of connection between her art class and like the art that was stolen. Because I was like, it's weird. Like you mentioned
oh,
two
good luck.
Different art things. I was like, oh, maybe there's a... But I don't think there is.
Maybe the art class was with David Lynch and he turns up and does a cameo later on.
That would be weird.
If I'm right, how much did you give me?
£1.
No. Seriously.
£2.50.
Shake on it?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the doorbell goes.
Yeah.
It's the end of the song. Doorbell goes. And who is it at the door? Ralph himself.
Yeah.
The forensic pathologist. Played by Ron McClarty,
who,
as I said, is the best thing in this. And he gives a really nice scene revealing exactly the information that we already know. That we knew by the end of the first episode. And he rounds off this episode by saying
exactly
that same information. just to remind us that we've got absolutely nowhere. Just to really set in stone. That as an audience, we've not got any journey whatsoever.
No.
He says, look, I had another look at the records, which of course he hasn't, but it's a way of saying, look, I know you know I know. It definitely wasn't, you know, how it looked.
Yeah.
And I can support that in the evidence. And then he says, and Larry, the captain, says, yep, thanks very much. And then he says, by the way,
yeah,
don't you ever threaten my wife again.
Yeah.
And that's the end of the episode.
Yeah, it's a really abrupt end.
And it, but it's also, it's weird because he goes, you threatened my wife. And he goes, no, I didn't. Yeah, yes, you did. You threatened her.
Like, yeah.
Okay, now I... Because also we saw the scene, right? Yeah. So we know that he didn't.
Yeah.
He, Captain knows that he didn't.
Yeah.
She didn't say he did. He's made this up. And then when challenged, he says no and repeats it.
Yeah. We all know it's not true.
Not only do we all know it's not true, but you're lying badly.
Yeah.
About something you don't know about.
Yeah.
It's really weird. So again, the only character that has any credibility has not only lost it in terms of he has no integrity, but also now he doesn't have any... I can't believe him as a three-dimensional character anymore either. So just final nail in the coffin there at the end of episode two.
Yeah.
As you say, you've learned absolutely nothing.
We're exactly where we were at the end of episode one.
Yeah. Oh.
There we go.
That was the entirety of Ill-Gotten Gains.
Yeah.
Which again, wasn't about him.
No. That's so unimportant.
I completely didn't clock that. Oh. There we are.
Yeah.
That's the end of it. I hope you're happy there, Adam.
Yeah, we may well try and do two episodes next time, because I know we'll be here for another year.
This is true. How many episodes have we got?
11.
11 episodes. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, we may well try and get a couple more in when we come round next time. Next week, I believe we are with Tristan once more, who this time has asked us to do the very specific podcast on bands that were elevated by one member to greatness.
This is a great one, but also difficult.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be so hard prepping for this.
Yeah.
But a great request.
Great request, and hopefully we can get Josh, if he's not too busy.
Yeah,
come and join us for another musical episode. And then after that, of course, we are back in the world of terrible cinema with The Room.
Oh, brilliant! Now, what I love about this is that I've never actually seen The Room in its entirety.
You've not, have you?
I've seen quite a few different segments and clips that are reshown all the time. But I've never sat down and watched it, so I'm really looking forward to this.
Excellent. Yes. Well, we'll watch The Room and The Disaster Artist as well.
I think we'll have to.
Fun. Yeah,
it'll be great fun.
Yeah, marvelous. Okay. Well, in the meantime, you know where to get in touch with us. Let us know what you thought about Cop Rock if you're watching it along with us. Let us know if you've got any ideas for upcoming podcasts. As we said, it's £5 a month, and we will do literally anything you want. You can get in touch with us via all the usual channels: on Twitter at Macabre Podcaster, on Facebook fb.me/podcastermacabre, via email podcastermacabre@gmail.com. And you can, of course, like, share, and subscribe to this podcast. And you've also got the old Jonathan Creek episodes that you can go back and listen to as well. Got people discovering them all the time, actually, recently.
Yeah, it's been really nice.
Hearing people getting into them. If you've not had a chance to listen to those Jonathan Creek ones, do go back and have a listen. They're all still available. And that's on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Anchor, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
That is entirely correct. And do get in touch. We really, really love it when we get to interact with you, whether it be via Twitter or Facebook or however you do it. It's really, really nice to hear from people, as Dave said, discovering different podcasts or subjects for the first time investigated. But in the meantime, I have been Callum Hughes.
I've been David Shopland.
And we'll see you next week.
Bye. Bye.
Sunshine, tears and rain, precious memories of years gone by. Eyes of darkness, fear and pain, all the time that we had.